everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and for the last 25 years, we've all been working for most of the major publishers and publications in the business. We've published over 50 books, and we've all taught illustration at the university level.
Each week, we're going to tackle a subject relating to illustration from our three perspectives. Sometimes we're going to agree. Well, we're almost always going to agree. We never barely argue. So, but maybe this time, because we don't even know what we're talking about. But you're going to learn something new.
Sounds good. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us. Today, it is Will's subject, and he has not told, he's withheld information from Lee and I on what we're supposed to be talking about today. So before we go to Will, I just want to ask you guys how everything's going with your projects and what you're working on right now. Will, what's up with you?
I have started working on the reboot of the Painting, Color, and Light class for SVS. And if you're new to this podcast, SVS stands for svslearn.com, which is one of our sponsors. We love those guys. They really help us out with this podcast.
They're our only sponsor.
They're our only sponsor.
It's all we need, though. Just yeah. One.
So svslearn.com is a online illustration tutorial and learning site that we started, like, what, 4 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah. I think for as long as we're doing it, it's always going to be 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably. We don't age. We're stuck in perpetual.
Over the last 5 years.
But yeah, I'm redoing a class simply because when we recorded it the first time, we did it in a class setting on online, and the audio isn't as good as it could be. And also, because we had to juggle our schedules, the organization ended up being a little bit, I don't want to say unorganized, but just kind of out of order. Is that the same thing as unorganized?
Sort of. We're cleaning stuff up is what he's trying to say.
Cleaning it up. Making it good. Good audio. And breaking down. The biggest thing is that we were dumping these two-hour video files, and now they're going to be segmented so you can go back and find what you're looking for. So anyway, that's what I'm working on.
Cool. I have...
All right. Lee, what about you?
Three things going on right now. One of them is my books. I have one book that I've signed a contract for, and I'm still in wait mode. And my art, they're trying to assign it an art director. And then in the meantime, my senior editor has gone to another publishing house. And so I'm waiting to get started with this project. But what I'm doing in the meantime, while I'm waiting for that to start, is I'm finishing up a basic digital painting class for SVS. And this sucker is so much fun. I have 90 videos so far, and I'm only in week 7. So
wow.
It's a lot of content.
So how long is the shortest video when you say 90 videos?
It's 5-second long videos.
I'm not as impressed.
Oh, dang it. No, they all vary between probably 45 minutes and 2 hours.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, and some of those are critique videos, but those are going to stay. This is going to be available in the subscription model that we have. And there's going to be, you know, all the critiques are in there too. So I'm doing drawovers and a bunch of new lectures. This is the first term that I've taught this class, and it's just so much fun to do that. And so I'm teaching that class, and we're in week 7 out of 10 right now. And so I'm doing that. And then at the same time, a lot of you guys are going to be jealous of this next comment. I've actually taken the week... dedicated the entire week to dialing in my studio. I don't know if you guys have ever done that, but like how I work now is different than how I worked 5 years ago, you know, in terms of what I need and kind of my process and both digitally and watercolor. And so, if you guys, Will and Jake can see my webcam right now, it's a bunch of boxes and just stuff's everywhere, but slowly but surely I'm like, okay, how do I work? And like, what's the best setup for that? So I'm custom building the interior space of my studio. I have two studios, and so all of them are going to just have exactly what I need. So I'm taking the week just to make that thing, and man, just the couple steps I've done has been so satisfying, because it's all these little annoying, you know, production problems, like, oh, when I'm painting, where do I put my brushes, you know, or, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Did you say you have two studios?
I do. I've got my Paris studio and my no.
And your New York studio.
I just take the jet between them. No.
What, you no, don't I, have two studios?
You do. I mean, you have a home office, and then you have the studio where you and Jake are, right?
Yeah. But the home office kind of became this one down here.
Well, same thing. I basically do all my teaching and watercolor painting here at the home studio, and then all my digital book stuff at the real studio, which is in downtown Franklin, Tennessee.
Wow.
Fancy.
That's super cool. The other half.
Jake. I would want to do that kind of thing, like build out some custom, tool holders and drawers and things like that. Right now, my studio is a mishmash of like IKEA and found desks and bookshelves and things like that. It works. I like it, but it would be cool to have like something a little bit more custom.
Yeah. Someday. It's hard. I mean, to like really figure out how to do it, you know what I mean? Without custom building, I'm not having custom furniture built for me. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to find the most applicable thing.
Yeah.
And no particle board and no cheap materials. That's like my one requirement, because all that particle board, the IKEA stuff works great until you try to move it somewhere and then it all breaks or.
Mm. Yeah. Right now, inside my IKEA drawers, I have silverware holders.
Oh, that's smart. That's really smart.
That actually works really good.
Maybe we should do a podcast on just how we organize our studio. I do have a full table, like a cutting table made of elephant tusk ivory. So I'm just kidding.
That's hilarious.
All right, Jake, what are you working on?
I have an aquarium with live squid, and that's where I get my ink. I just milk the squid each morning. No. So I just wrapped up doing my Inktober project. Inktober itself just wrapped up, and that was all consuming for like 2 months straight. It really picks up heat in September. And then, you know, there's a lot of like posts to get people amped up about it, because I'm running the Inktober social media accounts, mostly the Instagram account. I don't have the bandwidth to do the Facebook and the Twitter. Hopefully someday I can afford to hire a person to help me with that. But so that just takes a ton of work. And then doing the actual Inktobers, and this year I did my Inktober project, plus I did an extra 12 or maybe it was 15 different drawings for my sponsors. Actually, it's probably 20 drawings all told, because I had to do some extras for like Dick Blick. So that's done. And I just laid down on the couch yesterday. just, we were having a meeting here, and I was like, I couldn't sit up anymore. I'm just laying down.
That's fair.
For the meeting. Because the studio that we're in just got hammered with all kinds of, like all the Inktober t-shirts were in here that we were shipping out. I shipped out Skyheart in the last 2 months too. And so there's a bunch of extra Skyheart books, and I'm getting packages from the sponsors of like pens and art supplies that they want me to showcase and try out. And so it's just like stuff everywhere. So yesterday, me and Tanner and Aaron, the two assistants, cleaned the place while Will watched. He just sat there the whole time and watched.
I took a picture.
Oh, thank you.
I did take a picture. Will.
Did you take an after picture? You took the before picture.
I did.
You take the after. Like, it really was. You remember the beginning of Back to the Future when Marty goes into Doc's like studio to turn on, you know, feed the dog and turn on the amp that he can like play guitar with? You remember that?
Yeah.
I'm not hearing it from Lee, though. Lee.
Oh, wait. Sorry, I was reading something. What?
Oh, my gosh. Anyway. That's what our studio is like. You know, you're stepping over stuff and you're kicking things and you can't even like make it through the door and stuff like that. So now it's clean. It feels good. There's a good energy in this studio. The only thing left to clean up is my square, my little section. And then once that's done and I can like stretch out and find stuff without having to like lift things up, I think I'll be good. And the next thing I'm working on now is the Inktober book. It's the Inktober Handbook, which is being published by Chronicle. And it's like a how to ink, how to do Inktober, how do you fit into the world of ink type of book. So the notes that I've been getting back from the editors have been really positive and good. And I'm excited to hammer that thing out.
I should add that this is the beginning of Slowvember, so I need to get ready for going slow.
You've already lost 2 days.
It's okay. It's slow. Okay. Your first 2 days is just thinking about it.
Actually, there's a challenge that's gaining steam called Huvember. And
it's who is that person?
With Sketchtember and Inktober. So the idea goes is that in Sketchtember, you do all the sketches and do 30 sketches. And then in Inktober, you ink all your sketches. And then in Huvember, you color all your ink drawings.
What about Scratchtember?
I've already got Slow Timber. Stop all this other banter. One.
Listen, there's enough people for everyone to have an art challenge.
Slowvember is about creating a good, solid one piece of work, and it's got to be done perfectly. That's the only guidelines. Not perfectly, but as good as you can do.
Slothvember.
Slothvember.
What'd you do, Lee, last year for Slowvember?
I thought about what I was going to do for this year. That's how slow this is. No, I did. It's a 10-year plan. You're going to get one image every 10 years. I actually did I did two finished pieces for Slowvember last year. And that's about my smooth working time frame is like from like planning something, sketching it, getting it to the board, actually painting it, physical media, you know, watercolor. It's about 2 weeks per, and it was just it's enjoyable not to think, oh, I need to hurry or I think some people, for some reason in our society, everything's fast. Like that's the first thing you post something like, how long did that take you? You know? And then there's this badge. Oh, it only took me an hour.
If you can't knock something out in an afternoon, then, you know, don't even try.
Right.
Type of attitude.
The hard part about Slowvember and actually finishing things, I think we talked a little bit about that last time, is that last 20% is what makes a professional, in my opinion, because a lot of times students can get to that 75-80% and they don't know what to do. And that's a good place to be like, I don't know how to take this farther. And that's when you start posting to forums and asking for advice, and that's where you start to grow.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. All right, so Slowvember. You guys should try it out. Of course, when this podcast airs, it might be
Slowvember. Slowcember.
I don't know how many we've recorded ahead of time.
I think we're up to this podcast,
by the way. Like, we really like doing it. It's one of our favorite things. It's probably one of the highlights we were
having these discussions, like in our meetings, our regular meetings, they would devolve into just whatever topic came up, and we were like, this should be a podcast. It's a podcast about nothing, right?
We're the Seinfelds of podcasts. Hey, speaking of nothing, what is our topic?
Okay, are you guys ready?
What is it?
You're not reading anything right now?
I was bored.
I'm good. You have my attention for about 1 second.
Okay. About a couple of months ago, I got an email, and he's been one of the like mainstays in the forums and in the classes, and just one of those guys that you kind of get to know, even though we've never met him. I mean, you guys kind of feel like you know him, right? Mm-hmm. And very good competent. Yeah, very, very good work. And so he sent me this email basically saying, you know, he's been functioning as an art director or working as an art director for various companies. He says he moved to Amsterdam a year ago to work as a lead artist at a VR studio. And he's also currently illustrating two books, children's books. He says, glad you like this suggestion. And this was on turning his questions into a podcast. It's funny, having been an art director in the past and basically acting as one on a per-project basis. Now in the video game industry, I'm usually on the other side of this. Now I'm working as an artist again and finding it both fun and challenging. Here are a few questions. So basically this podcast is, you know, the title is going to be something like how to work with an art director. As illustrators, we all work with art directors. And one of the things I really liked about his questions were, one, they were well thought out, so we could actually do a podcast on this topic because there's a lot of different questions. Two, he had the insight already as an art director. So he's actually asking these questions like, how do you suggest people work with people like me? And also, how do you suggest I work with someone like me? Because in the interesting thing for me is when we were going to school, art school, they never talked about this. We had a few adjunct people or a few guest lecturers come through, and we could ask them questions, you know, like, so what's it like out there? What happens and all? But really, the nuts and bolts of actually working with an art director isn't something that you will usually, you know, find a book on or something. You know, it's like something that you kind of learn on the job. So I felt like if we answer these questions, it could give some people who are kind of starting down that road a glimpse into basically what it's like to develop a working relationship with an art director. So what I thought I'd do is read some of these questions off and just kind of get your insight and let you guys answer it wrong, and then I'll come back in with the right answers. And
Let's do it.
Be good.
Sounds good. Sounds like a plan.
Okay. So the first one that he says asks is, how much creative freedom can I expect to have when illustrating a book? What's typical in your experience?
I'll take a first shot at this. In every children's book that I've done, they, for the most part, hired me because of a specific illustration that they saw me do, that they saw posted. And so usually the beginning talks are like, okay, so what are you thinking for this book? What kind of stylistic thing are you thinking? Because on my website, I have a handful of styles that I work in. You know, there's other artists who are strictly in one style, and you look at their portfolio, nothing strays from the style that they do. And so if they hire that artist, then yes, they want you to draw in that style or create art in that style that is displayed on your website. But if you have, you know, a more varied style, like I've got comic art that I do, I've got some more painterly illustrated stuff that I do, I've got some line art stuff that I do. And so I'll just sit down with them and say, well, I guess this, I don't actually sit down with them, I'll email and I'll say, what, or it could be on a phone call, what style are you guys thinking would be best for this approach? And they'll send back an illustration, or they'll describe an illustration that they saw and say, they'll say, this is what we were thinking for this particular book. And once I know that, the freedom really lies in how I decide to use that style to tell the story. So I can basically be as creative as I could figure out and want to be inside the box of this style. And as long as I stay within that style, then usually the art director's happy and the editor's happy and the author's happy, and I get a check at the end of the day.
I'm kind of the same way. I almost always ask, you know, what made you think of me for this project, or why did you pick me? I mean, what is there any one thing that kind of that drew you to my work? And they will send along, same thing as Jake, like a couple of images saying, oh, we really love the feel of this. Or, you know, they'll get specific, like we like the line quality of this or something. And so they'll give me that rough framework. But my initial inclination to answering this question was, early in my career, I didn't have as much freedom. Mm-hmm. And then as I progressed, I gained more freedom. But then when I actually thought about it while Jake was talking, this is the benefit of actually thinking before you speak, which I don't normally do. I think I've had the same amount of creativity and openness to the subject matter the entire time. It's just now I feel more confident in taking it. That I don't ever remember a project where for a book project where an art director said, we need this to be on this page, or we need to show this one specific thing. It's almost always been my own self-imposed limitations of what I think they want. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest thing that I learned along the way is I throw all kinds of stuff out there and say, what if we do this? I mean, the book I'm working on right now makes no sense, and I love it. I love really nonsensical kind of stuff. And I was nervous about pitching it, but I think I've always had that kind of freedom. I just didn't have the balls to ask for it.
Now, when you say the book you're working on right now doesn't make any sense, what you're saying is the words themselves, if you just had the manuscript, you wouldn't, and you read it, you wouldn't know what it's about. Is that what you're saying?
Sort of. It's there's not a cohesive story within this manuscript. And so it's up to me to come up with what that cohesive story is. And I'm thinking outside of the box more than I ever have with this one. In other words, it's not that it doesn't make sense, but it's a very creative, I think, solution to the narrative problem. And I may not have had enough confidence to actually submit these sketches and this concept to an art director early, but I think I probably did have that option. I just didn't feel confident enough to take it. And so the big thing that I, you know, if I was talking to myself back when I was just starting, I'd say, you know, talk to the art director like a person and say, hey, you know, just throw out all those what ifs. Like, can we do it like this? Or giving more options than originally I did when I was first out of school. Cause I was so nervous, like, oh, I hope they like it. That was my whole thing. Like, I just hope they like it. And now I really want to get into, you know, just playing around and sculpting out, like, almost like it's clay. And you can try all these different things and mold a couple of things and sketches and keep it real loose in the beginning. And there's no reason I couldn't have done that early. Like I said, I just didn't have enough confidence. Mm.
So I think you mentioned something that we could glance over, but I don't want to because I think it's really important. And that is, and by the way, your answer was way better than Jake's.
What?
Crushed you.
But it was that, the self-censoring part. So that has been, like when I first started out, that was even for the first decade, I was constantly going, okay, I think I want to do this, but I think they're going to reject it. So I'm just going to do this more boring solution that I'm not going to be happy with, but I think they'll accept it and it means I'll do less work. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly.
So then how do you, he didn't ask this question, but I mean, like, how do we boldly go knowing, like, how do you impose more work on yourself? No, you know, like where you have that feeling like they're going to reject this, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's fun and it's exciting and it's different.
Well, what I did this time is I pitched three separate concepts and I wrote out, not only did I do the sketches, but it was a very formal pitch. Like I wrote down all this stuff, this accompanying information that went with the concepts that was, you know, here's the benefits of this approach. And here's the cons of this approach. And so some of the, you know, I definitely did the more expected route in there. And I said, hey, this is a more conservative route, but it might land in a more understandable way with more audience members. Or if we're okay being more creative, that's what I said on those more risky options was, this one's not going to hit as many people, but it's way more interesting for the few people who like it. Right. And the cons are there is like, you might not have as big an audience. And we just talk openly about all that stuff.
I like that. The other thing, though, is, Will, as far as like, how do you regulate yourself or how do you keep yourself from getting stagnant or producing stale work is, I always think of my latest children's book as like the calling card for the next book, you know? And so if there's something I am interested in and want to work on, I'm going to try to fit that into the book that I'm currently working on so that I could show this art to the next editor, to the next art director and be like, hey, see, look at this thing that I did here. I'm really proud of this thing. I want to do more stuff like this. And if I know that I'm turned in boring, stale stuff, then the next job's going to be, oh yeah, we like what you did in that book. We're going to want the same thing for the next book. So every book I try to do something, I try to have at least one or two spreads where I'm really pushing things as far as I can push them. And I'm doing stuff that I really want to do. So that I can try and get more of that type of work on the next project.
And do you get shut down sometimes? Like, do you feel like you have these great ideas and you do a lot of work on them and then they don't get used, or do they usually get used?
Well, what's cool is in this day and age, you have a platform to share stuff that doesn't get used. So you still get mileage out of work that didn't get published. And to be honest, with the way that books sell, the amount of numbers that books sell, more people are going to see whatever you post online than who bought the book. So what you can say is, like, here's this idea that I had for this book, and it ended up not being used, but I really liked it, so I'm going to share it here anyway. By the way, you could buy this book, and it's out on store shelves right now. And that way you get to promote your book, but then you also get to promote the art that you really enjoyed creating.
I get shut down all the time. I just gotten used to it. One of the things that I always try to push in the books early is a real limited color palette, and it never flies. Huh. Somehow other artists can do it though. Like, I don't understand it. Like Isabel Arsenault from France. Beautiful work, and it's a lot of grays in the work. Very limited color. Even the actual spots of color are pretty muted. And I think it's gorgeous, and I would love to do that. And every time, the best quote ever was when I submitted some sketches like that, I submitted some paintings as possible finishes, saying, hey, what if we go this direction? They're like, no, I love the limited color, but maybe we go full color. <It's> like, okay.
I love it, but not really.
They it's kids' work, they always want it to be colorful.
Yeah. Well, going back to what you said, though, it's like, I never see as anything I draw as being wasted, you know. I mean, there are deadlines to meet and whatnot, but and I wouldn't spend an entire month working on something that they didn't know I was working on. I would show them a test or an example or something, just so I know I'm not wasting a ton of time. But yeah, everything can be reused or shown or shared or something like that, and it all helps you, and you get to be better as an artist because you went down that path and you explored that thing, and that helps you just for the time you put into to trying an idea out and growing it.
So you're like an NBA player.
How so?
Because NBA players, you know, basketball players, the best ones, they constantly drive through the lane, and they often don't get the ball passed to them. For the layup,
yeah,
or the dunk.
That's a good way to put it.
And so what you're saying is, I'm just going to keep driving through the lane. I'm going to make these sketches, but overall, it's going to help the overall body of work that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. That was the most specific analogy I've ever heard in my life.
I had it written down in my notes. You have to work NBA in somehow.
I was wondering. All right, let me ask you guys a question. Have you done have you been as satisfied with your professional work as you are with your personal work? In other words, do those line up side by side, or is...
I don't like that question. Next.
I've just never hit in my books to date, and I've done about 24, 25 of them or something. I've never hit what I feel like I hit in my personal work. It's getting closer and closer and closer, but I have not hit it.
You gave me the confidence to come out.
Okay, go ahead.
I feel the same way.
It's sort of like a pro hockey player.
It's like you're your best art director. It's like a...
No, go ahead. Sorry.
It's like cleaning the sink.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
So, yeah, I mean, like you're your own best art director for some reason. Like, now, I will say with Bonaparte, the latest book, and it's going to sound self-serving because it's obviously, you know, it's doing so well on Amazon right now, and you should go and get one and all.
But, wow. Wow.
But no, that to date, that's the one that hit the closest, and that's the one where they gave me the most freedom. And this might be a good time. We're still on question one, but I will give you guys, failed on your answers. I'm going to give you the correct answers to the first question. Okay?
What?
All right.
And that is... that the smaller the publisher, the less freedom you're going to have, typically.
That's true.
So as you start out, you're going to be more frustrated as an illustrator than when you make it. So you guys are both working with big publishers. So, Lee, who's your publishers that you're working with right now?
Boutique kind of imprints of Scholastic and then Simon & Schuster.
Right, so huge publishers. And Jake, you're working with?
Chronicle Books and Chronicle is
they're by themselves. Okay.
Yeah. You haven't heard of them?
I've heard of Chronicle. I thought they were an imprint though. You learn something every day. It's okay. No, we'll get
through
this.
They got the coolest little icon. They got the two glasses.
Whatever.
Or not two glasses. It's one pair of glasses with two lenses.
So you said HarperCollins as well? So those guys are going to give you, you know, and I'm with Bonaparte's with Random House. And so, I mean, Crown is the imprint. But, I mean, they're the top of their game. They know what they're doing. They know that they'll get the best work from their artists if they only make nudges and guide you through it. And if there's good communication, they're just pros. They know not to micromanage. You go to the small publishers, and they're going to say things like, we were kind of hoping that you'd make this character look like my granddaughter, you know? And you're like, just for because? And, well, yeah, you know, like, I mean, stupid stuff, you know? And so I think that's a big part of this question is, you know, getting creative freedom. You're just going to get more and more as your career goes. The other piece of advice that I have, and I don't think that you can necessarily do this right out of the gate. This is kind of down the road. But I will, I'll contact my art director and just say, look, these sketches are for your eyes only. Like, these are horrible. I just want to see if I can get some of these ideas through. If you think you personally, if you know, if this will even fly. So for instance, and this is the limitation of a podcast, but, if you look at the back page, you'll have to buy my book to do this, of course. But if you look at the back page,
oh my gosh,
of Bonaparte, the final scene is the characters are all up in a jungle gym and they're just doing random things playing on a jungle gym. It's an homage to the Pete Eastman book, Go Dog Go, the final tree scene, the party scene. And the text didn't reflect anything like that. You know, it didn't say anything about a jungle gym. It didn't say anything about them playing it, but it was perfect for the text. And I knew it was perfect, but I was not going to draw out all those characters because I added, there's probably like 20 characters in that drawing and they're all doing different things. And so I just basically drew a Pictionary version of a jungle gym with like little squiggles for people, for characters. I mean, you couldn't even tell which character was which. And I apologize profusely to my art director, just saying, these aren't sketches. These are ideas. These are visual scribbles. Don't show these to the editor. Don't show them around to anybody. This is a conversation between me and you. What do you think they'll think? Do you think they'll like this? Should I pursue this? And then I can invest a lot less time. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? You wouldn't suggest that for starting out, would you?
In terms of like submitting loose work to an art director, is that kind of the abbreviated version of that? I think you need to prove yourself in terms of submitting sketches to a new client. But after you submitted a couple, I think you've got the freedom to go ahead and do that because they know what they're going to get.
They know what they're going to get, right?
I'd like to talk to your point though, Will, that you said earlier about the caliber of client does change the nature of this whole question. And I remember early in my career when I was doing some educational style magazine jobs where I'd have like a 7-page layout or something in Highlights magazine or something. It's not actually Highlights, so I don't want to use them as an example, but similar to that. And I would get a story. They'd send me the story and I'd get a rough mock-up of how the layout's going to be. And then there would be all these illustration notes that says, yeah, I mean, it's so specific. Like the king is holding the frog right here and there's two people in the background looking on and they're inside a castle, you know. It was super specific, and I always, after I did that one job, I said, I'll never, never, ever do that again. And I'd rather have a different job. I'd rather work at Starbucks than have those kind of notes.
Yeah. Actually, there was a book where I got to the entire end of the of doing the dummy, and even to the point where I had, like, penciled out all the final illustrations before I went to like final rendering, right? And things were looking good. And I realized, and the art director didn't catch this, I didn't catch this, but I was one spread short. So like this book was finished, ready to go to drawing, you know, to doing the final rendering and everything. And there was one more spread. And I was like, hey, do you realize I don't have enough illustrations? And they're like, what are you talking about? And I said, count it up, look. And so we're scrambling trying to figure this out, and I threw out an idea because the book ended on this big like explosion. This
which book was this?
This was 12 Slaves of Christmas.
Oh,
which, you know, this is a good time to probably pick that book up. Since
we're coming into well, Christmas is coming.
Oh, I didn't know it was possible to do product placement in a podcast, but we are managing to do it. Okay.
But the whole book is this crescendo to this final illustration where all the characters are on the page and there's hundreds of elves and there's all of their vehicles, all the sleighs that they built. And that was the end of the book, right? And now I had one more spread and I was like, what if we did this on this other spread and on this last spread? And it was like this little, you know, this denouement to this crescendo. And it was just like this nice little like punchline at the end of everything. And she's like, that is a great idea. Let me run it past the author and the editor and I'll get back to you. And they came back and said, you know what? Everybody loves it. They signed off on it. Go for it. And so that was like, you know, I had the guts, I guess, to or maybe even like the audacity to say, what if the children's book ended like this instead of saying, hey, we've got one more spread. Can you go ask the author what she wants on this page? I just said, I think it should be this. So I would say you have to like judge it. If it's a really good idea, trust your gut and go for it. But if you've got nothing, you know, don't throw out an idea just for the sake of throwing out an idea.
Right.
If you do work for self-published authors, you are going to get beat down with illustration notes. That's one of our other reasons not to take self-published stuff for the most part. Some self-published authors probably understand they're supposed to give illustrators freedom, but a lot of them have a very specific way that they're picturing the book, and they don't have enough art direction experience to understand how to work with an illustrator. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful of that. I mean, one of my favorite books to illustrate was my Kickstarter book, which is available on my website right now.
Lee, I thought we decided we weren't going to do that. This Diet Coke is really refreshing. Okay, we've spent the whole time so far, other than that extremely long intro, doing one question. So can we move on to number two now?
Yeah, how many questions are there, Will?
There's like 30. No, I'm just kidding. We'll pick and choose. We'll do the best ones. Okay. What would you suggest I do if I don't agree with the changes that are being asked for by the art director or editor?
Oh, that's a good one.
I don't agree with it. I don't want to do it.
You need to have a reason. It can't just be, oh, I don't agree with it. But I've pushed back again, as I get more confidence, I push back a little more saying, the reason I don't agree with that is, and then I list out the specific reasons, and hopefully that is enough of a testimony to at least make them think about that stuff. And I have had art directors and editors say, oh yeah, that makes sense actually. So let's go with your option. Or they say, well, it doesn't matter what you're, this point doesn't matter. And then I concede it and say, all right, I got to do it, but I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
You're hard to work with.
Oh, I'm really hard to work with.
Wait, before you go, Jake, would you do that as a beginning illustrator? Would you have the, you know, the moxie to
pick your battles. It can't be a daily thing. You know what I mean? You got to pick the ones.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say is that like every project, I know there's going to be some pushback to something that I do. And so I just have to like go into it thinking, you're going to want at least one or two of your ideas, like really gutsy, like stick it out there ideas to go through. And you're going to want to push back on those things. So when a note comes in, if, you know, I just do this like judgment, like, is this something I could live with? And is this worth going to battle for and not getting these other things that I'm going to really want to have done? And it's like that, choose your battles and decide which is more important. This note, like, we want this character to be a pig, not a cow. You know, that's fine as long as I get to draw the rocket ship barn, you know? So that's actually a cool idea for a children's book. The rocket ship barn. Space farm.
There it is.
I mean, were you going to say something, Lee?
I was just going to say, if anybody wants to do Space Farm, go for it. I'm really not going to do that. So the idea is free for whoever wants to take it and run with it. Go do Space Farm.
Maybe we'll make Space Farm one of our, because we host a contest every month at svslearn.com where it's just a monthly drawing challenge. Maybe Space Farm will be our next one.
Oh, I like
that's
it.
A good idea.
What do you do with fun. the waste, the manure in space?
You just jettison into a sun.
That's a good point. Keeps the sun, but it'll enough of it will make the sun hotter, so contribute to global warming.
I don't think you understand how big a sun is.
I don't think you understand how much waste there is from Space Farm.
No, here's the other thing too. What's great about this podcast is we give you ideas for you to do your own children's books. So there's Space Farm, there's
Horse Boat. Yeah. Oh, that's the Seinfeld thing. No, that was the Office. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're getting off track.
We're really
I mention one thing about being off track? Now that you guys started mentioning product placement, here's my idea. Blackmail product placement. Do you know what that is?
No. Mm-mm.
That's where we badmouth a product until they pay us.
How do we avoid getting sued?
Well, those are just testimonies. Like, whoa, is there a roach in this Diet Coke? We say that every day until Coke pays us.
Next episode, Everything We Hate.
Sorry.
I was so distracted. I don't know if you guys already answered this in that last question, but my, and I think you said it, Jake, but I'm going to reiterate with an example, and that is to be solution oriented. If you don't like the change, didn't you to kind of brush on that to come with a solution?
Would that mean I got the answer right and it's better than Lee's?
Yeah.
Yes. That's what I said.
I mean, like, so if you see, you know, a change that they want in the art and you don't like it. Now I think the creativity is on you to either figure out how to love the change, which is tough because you're going through this emotional change of, I loved what I came up with, to this thing that I'm not going to be able to use. But really, and I've had this happen where I've actually fought for something. The art director was like, nope, it has to be changed. And I ended up loving the change, the solution that we came up with, better than the original thing. So I went 180 degrees from loving something to then loving more and looking at the final product going, wow, I'm so glad they wanted this change. So I think it's something inside of us often where we just are kind of resistant to change because we put value into this other idea, right? Mm-hmm. And we're being asked to basically trash it and start over. And now you can also prevent problems. This one doesn't really fit this question, but I'll throw it out there anyway. When I did Skeleton for Dinner with Marjorie Kyler, which is a Halloween book, and it's Halloween time right now.
You have to remember that this episode is going to air probably the first week of December.
Oh, that's right.
Ha ha.
Darn. Well,
so it's Christmas.
So before they sell out next year, you need to get one. Anyway. we had all these tombstones in the book because it took place in a graveyard. Almost the whole book takes place in a graveyard. So as I'm drawing the characters doing this and that and running around and doing what they're doing, I've got tombstones everywhere, tombstones in the foreground, middle ground, background. And it dawned on me, like, these are going to look weird because they're all blank. What goes on the tombstone? So I thought, I really don't want to see this book go out without faint writing. Even if it's hard to read, you know, you look at it and it doesn't pop off. But if you examine it, you can actually make out the words, which is a hard thing to do. You got to get the values right and everything. But I thought, I would love to put my family names on there. I'd love to put my pets on there. I'd love to put... I had a student that in California that died. It was really, really tragic. I'd love to put him in there. You know, the people in my life that have died and friends and things. But I thought if I go to the art director and say, hey, can I put my family names on these tombstones? The art director would probably be like, no. So I said, hey, would you like to put some of your family names on some of these tombstones? And maybe Marjorie would too. We could ask her. And then we could also maybe put some of mine on there too. So the answer was yes. The long story short, the answer was yes. And most of my family names are the ones that are most prominent in the most prominent places in the book.
Nice. So,
yeah. Having a solution ahead of time solves a lot, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to handle it.
And one of the things going into professional work that you guys got to remember, and this is sometimes different from being a student, almost anything you pitch, if you're excited about it, the teacher will be excited about it. And then you just kind of do your own thing and we hope that it looks great. And then you go to working as a professional and you haven't really gotten the feedback where you have to make a change. And it doesn't matter what you want. They're going to make the change anyway. So my point is that when I go into a professional illustration job, I assume that I'm working with a team. And this is really helpful just to my own mental well-being, is that it's going to be a team. It's going to be shown to 10 people or 20 people, and there may be some changes. And just saying, okay, just being cool with that is, you know, before it happens, is, I think, a good technique for just getting through the change process and how much freedom you're going to have.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, I come into a lot of these children's book projects thinking, sort of having the mind of a mercenary, like, this really is the battle of the author and the editor, who's like, they're so pumped about this book and they just need an illustrator to like carry out the vision that they already have, that they've already built. And so I'm like, I'll do whatever you guys want. I want my check at the end, but I also want like a good portfolio piece. But at the end of the day, like, this is your project. This is your book. And so if they have notes and they want to change something or they want to make something different, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'll just go right along with that. The other thing too is I really got to understand that the editor who's been working in publishing, you know, just as long as I have, if not longer, but has probably, you know, for every one book I've done a year, she's probably done 10 books a year. So she's been through this process and seen books succeed and seen books fail. She also works with a marketing department who every year does, you know, anywhere from 30 to 100 books, however many, you know, this particular imprint or this publisher would do. And they've seen books succeed and fail based on a cover design or based on, you know, some sort of content. And so when they come back and say, you know what, we need a character to look like this, or we need the cover to be more like this, and we, you know, we don't want handwritten letters, we want this font, you know, I tend to just kind of go with that, unless it is something, you know, really specific that I want to add to my portfolio or I want to put my name on, and I push back on those handful of little things. But for the most part, you know, I could sort of trust their vision and trust what they want.
Good. So here's a quick one. We're running out of time. So I'm just going to, I want your quick answer on this one. Not that those long answers weren't good and valuable, but sometimes quick answers are good too. Have you ever refused to change something?
So are you saying, like, even after that pushback that says, no, I don't want to, they've come back and said, no, you really have to do this. And I've said, nope, I'm not doing it. You can give this project to someone else.
Yeah, I think that's what this is being asked here.
No, I've never done that.
I've done that one time.
How did it go?
Horribly. It was a disaster. It was a total disaster. It was.
We got a rogue illustrator here.
Well, it was kind of their fault. That's what I always say when other people have a problem with me. Mm. It was a design firm, and I was doing these icons for a website, and I had done them, and they were, you know, it was like 8 of them, and it was a digital magazine, and it was going to some print work too, but these icons are going to be used all over the place, and we had gone through the first round. I thought they looked great, and they thought they looked great, and then one person had a little problem with them, so then we started this change process. Now everybody's super hypercritical, focused on these things, and the next round goes through and everybody likes him except for one person. And then it starts. And then, so we had gone through like five versions of it and where we're completely redesigning. And then by the fifth time we're getting into small little tweaks. And then I get this email saying, hey, maybe we just step back, look at this whole thing, and we just start over. And these are for icons that I swear they're going to appear about a half an inch in size on an 8.5 by 11 page. You know, I mean, they're tiny. And I said, I responded with, here's the files, the layered files, knock yourself out. And they were shocked. But I was like, you know, I don't care if I work with them again, because you can't be in an endless revision loop for, you know, right. I had like $300 on the line. I'd spent weeks on them at that point.
Yeah. The hard thing for us as artists and people that are listening, is, you know, you're starting your art career or you're in the middle of it or somewhere along the road, we're always balancing this, you know, making enough money to support ourselves but also like enjoying this thing we decided to do because we wanted to enjoy our careers, right? So we want to have this fun career and we want to make great art, but we also have to make money. And that's always tough because your decisions will be affected by money at different times. I mean, there's just no getting around it, right? I mean, like some jobs you're going to take because the budget's amazing. And sometimes you're going to say no to something because you've lost the vision for it, or you think it will hurt your career in the long run. Like you don't want anyone to see the finished product when you're done with it, right? I had, and I've talked about this on my YouTube channel, but in a nutshell, I'm not going to go through this whole thing, but I lost my rep over saying no. And that's, you know, I lost a lot. It ended up in the long run being much better off. But at the time, I was asked to rewrite a book. I was asked to take the manuscript that the author didn't fully flesh out. It's a long story. But the art director asked me, the editor asked me, well, you can do anything. Just rewrite it in your own words. And that's not my job. I'm not an author, you know. My rep was at the time was telling me, oh, if you do this, then you'll be really valuable to this publisher. And I'm like, I'll be a chump to this publisher because they're not paying me for writing, you know. And the only thing that tells me that I was in the right is a few years later, that publisher went out of business. You know, this is not the way that you run a business. And it was hard at the time because I knew that I was saying no to a whole book project, you know, in the middle of it.
You did the right thing, though, Will.
Yeah, it was the right thing at the time, but it felt like the editor was pissed at me, my agent was pissed at me, the art director wouldn't speak to me, the author I heard was mad at me, the art director was really pissed. We were sending emails back and forth. I'll burn your soul. Okay, so...
can I add to that what you're talking about now? It's a little bit you've ventured into a different area a little bit, but it's knowing what you're good at and sticking to your guns. I mean, I think you did totally the right thing because you didn't know what you're doing. It would come back. It would ultimately look bad on you.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, once you say you're an illustrator, people, the outside world, hear that as I will illustrate anything in any style for anyone. And it's so bizarre. Like I had a children's book offer one time that required me to do likenesses of like five people throughout the entire book. Uh-huh. And those five characters are on every page. And if you've seen my work, I do glorified stick figures. I mean, I'm barely an artist at this point, but I sure don't do likenesses. And it would have been a disastrous project for me to take because I just don't do that. And I, you know, I don't know about you guys, if you guys have ever been asked to do tattoos. If you say you're an illustrator, you're going to get asked to do tattoos.
Oh yeah.
I'm terrible at that. I don't do that. And so just knowing what you're good at and what you're not, you don't have to be a generalist or a jack of all trades in this. And it's helpful, I think, to know what to say yes to and what to say no to.
Now the counter to that though, is that you, Lee, I'm looking at you. You like do all kinds of things. You're good at a lot of different things. So at some point you had to venture out of your comfort zone and expand.
Right. I did. I mean, I have. I love realistic painting. I've done a lot. I've taught portrait painting and things like that. But it's just not my current style at the time. I mean, I don't think you should limit your skill set, but you can limit what you do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. This is. I don't know what you guys feel about this one, but it's basically. Do you? Is there a way to feel out the publishing team before you commit to doing a book with them? Because you know, to see if you fit creatively eye to eye. Is there, what would you say to that?
No,
there's just not really. I mean, I guess you could, if you saw, if you, you know, you get an offer, it's usually going to be an email, and then you know, you look up the publisher and you see what they're doing. And if they're doing, if your stuff is all fiction and super primitive work, and they're asking you to do all the stuff they publish is super realistic nonfiction.
Right.
You know, you might say, well, no. But then you ask the question that Jake said earlier is like, why did you pick me? And then they should, like, what images, I always ask this question too, what images of mine did you see that made you think that I was perfect for this project? And if they send you the work that you did, you know, 30 years ago, so it sends you something weird. Or maybe they have the wrong illustrator and they send you work that you didn't do.
No, I think those opening discussions should be along the lines of why you picked me, what, how do you see this going, like how do you see our you know, this project, and you know, happening. You also want to know, like, am I working primarily with the editor or with the art director? Because there's been some where I talk more to the editor than the art director, and there's some where it's, you know, the editor is just absent and it's all coming through the art director. And so, you know, if you're cool with that and you find that out, then you just know that going into it, that this is the style that they work. And the other thing too is you can go find other artists who have worked with that team and just email them and say, hey, how'd you like working with so-and-so? You know, I've got a book offer here, and I'm just wondering what this team is like, if you're really worried about that. But honestly, like, everybody's a professional in publishing for the most part, and you really, like, they've weeded out the stinkers.
On the higher end, but on the lower end, stuff. I would say, and I haven't done this in the publishing world, but I had a friend that wanted me to create a logo for his, it was a 5K race. And, you know, as a friend, I was going to do this thing for him. And so I said, just to save me a lot of time, send me three logos that you love, that you could, you know, of other 5K runs, you know. And I put it back on him to do some homework, you know. So if you are wondering if you're going to line up with your creative team, they need to make them send you stuff that fits in their vision. So you're like, oh, okay, you're talking about that.
That sounds familiar. I believe, Will has, for the last 6 months, has been telling me that he doesn't like our music for the podcast, the opening music and the outro music. And I should say, when we decided to do this podcast, I'm like, well, we need music. And I picked a couple of different tunes and I played them for Will. And he's like, yeah, they're fine. Yeah,
I really didn't listen. Good. I should have listened more. It's me. But you know what it sounds like? It sounds like the podcast for this is your child daycare podcast. We'd like to introduce our special guest today. We're going to be talking about,
it's a little too soft,
how to change diapers to do, in an environment.
What he wants to, to do is like something a little bit harder, a little bit more metal.
It puts me to sleep. I'm like, is it nap time? You know? Okay.
Are you ragging on our intro outro while we're still using the intro outro?
So but here's the thing. So I said to Will, I said, all right, Will, I'm fine with changing it. Let's just change it. Use it for a year, and then we'll switch it in the new year. We'll call it like a new season or whatever, and we'll have new music. And you pick out what you want and show it to me, and then we'll decide. And guess how many songs I've heard from Will? It's been a couple months now.
That's because I'm waiting.
Can we get an improv, Will? If you had to pick the kind of music that you think it should sound like, just go ahead and hum a few bars.
I'm gonna
What would it sound like? Come on.
I'll play something on my bass, and we'll do like an intro like Seinfeld or something.
There we go. It's self-serving. Will wants to use his own bass solo. Right.
It's like, you know, the intro music just doesn't have enough bass. And, you know, I play bass. That's hilarious. Maybe what we should do is open it up to our listeners and have them submit.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, I love that.
Thinking along those lines. Okay, look, we've got a few more questions. We're going to get through this. These are good ones.
How many more for real?
There's three, but they're short. They're short.
So for us, that's about an hour and a half more.
You guys can make them short. Just go with
it. Pick the best one. Let's do that because I've got to go.
Oh.
Something more important than the podcast. Getting in the way.
Hey, you guys listening, you're in the way right now.
Yeah, sorry, your schedule wasn't convenient for Jake.
Okay, if I have to pick an editor, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what I have to go to so that you guys could feel bad.
A dentist appointment.
You ready for this? It's a funeral.
Oh, no.
No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Actually, it's a funeral for my furnace. Our furnace gave out yesterday, and we have to replace it. And the quote we got is... I don't even want to say how much it is. It made my stomach turn.
Yeah, it did.
For a furnace? How much is a furnace?
It's expensive.
It's a high efficiency, like, save you money furnace.
Doesn't sound like it.
Well, are you going to be in that house for a long time?
It's a furnace air conditioner combo.
I'm going to say $3,300. Is that your quote?
Multiply that by three.
What? Okay.
Look, we might want to edit this part out.
No, this is the life of an illustrator. You got to deal with your furnace at some point.
You got to deal with your furnace. Okay, best.
Yeah. So let me just say this. So now I'm sitting here. My wife's like sick to her stomach, right? Because we just got to come up with. I mean, we have some money in savings, but that money we were saving for something else. But whatever. So now I'm sitting here thinking, like, what do I do that I can get $10,000 with real quick? Like, do I come up with a print series? Do I sign another book deal? Do I, you know, do I don't want to sell t-shirts again. That was a nightmare.
This is a Jake Parker problem. He can just come up with anything that he says and he gets $10,000.
Yeah. Just pay me. I'm Jake Parker.
Well, no, but I mean, maybe this is another topic, but this is why it's so important to build an audience and build a fan base. And I didn't always have 450,000 Instagram followers. I once had 100, you know. And before Instagram, I just had a blog with 2,000 visitors, right? Maybe on a month, whatever. And so I would always come out with a book or a print and sell, you know, 20 of them or whatever, or 50, something like that. But I always stuck with it and I always did it. And for the people who have been following me for years and years and years, they know that, you know, they've shown me like these old books that I made at Kinko's and like, I still got it. And it's not an overnight thing. It's just something that every year you have a project, you print it, you make it, you sell it, and then you start working on the next one. And it just compounds over time. You build a fan base and someone who bought something from you looks at it, you know, from time to time. And they think, I wonder what that guy's up to now. And they might go back and, oh, this person has an Instagram account now. Let's look at that. And, oh, I really like what they're doing now. What's the, you know, I want to support, how can I support them somehow? So I really derailed this, but
that's. I'm just enjoying. I've got popcorn here.
Keep going.
Okay. Last question.
Last question.
Second to last question that I'm going to answer by myself. How long would you typically wait to hear feedback on submitted thumbnail sketches and sketches and all that stuff? Sometimes I'll wait 3 weeks or a month on some of these book projects. It's amazing how long they take sometimes. Okay, that wasn't the last question. Here's the last question. See how I did that, Jake? Got that in there? Your worst experience working with an art director? And I'll pass on this because I pretty much already gave it. Your worst experience with an art director?
Man,
I do have another one.
Do you have any bad experiences, Lee?
Not really. I mean, most of the time, this is the beauty of this industry, is that everybody is out to make a really good book. I I mean, that's the best part, is the goal is the same for everybody. And, you know, despite these little squabbles that we're talking about, you know, move a character, change a character, whatever, most of the time I end up becoming friends with these people that I work with, and it becomes really rewarding. I think that's one benefit of this career, is everybody's in it, of course, to be successful in their own right, but we're all rooting for each other.
You know, one thing that wasn't asked in here, since you guys are going to basically pass on this one.
Everything's one thing, good.
Yeah, everything's all right. One thing that wasn't really asked in here is like how to turn your art director into a friend, which is, you basically just said you want to do. You friends like to hire friends and like to work with people they get along with and people they relate to. So I like to try to insert personal things in the email, like, you know, I hope you have a good whatever this weekend, have a good time with doing whatever you're doing. This is what I'm going to be doing, you know?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
And you'd be surprised. Like sometimes those little things spark little conversations later on. And if the person can remember you because they're like, oh, you know, I'm taking care of my dogs this weekend or something. Oh, I have dogs. He's a dog person. Now that's one more thing to like, you know?
Yeah.
One thing I like doing is finding them on social media. So find their Twitter account. Most people in publishing have a Twitter account. If not, then their Instagram account. And then usually I'll just like respond to something that they've said on there. So they see like, oh, this is a real person out doing, you know, real things and paying attention. One of my art directors turns out to be like a brilliant illustrator as well. And has just an adorable style that I love. And so I wrote her a separate email outside of all of our like work emails. And I found like her personal email account from her website. And I just sent her an email and said, I really love your style. I think it's great. I love what you're doing. And I just wanted to drop you a line about that. And that I didn't do it for, you know, any sort of like, it was just out of like, I wanted her to know that I'm, respect her work and her work as an artist as well.
Well, Nat, I mean, Nat is an art director and he's a good illustrator, really good illustrator. And so you've got, I have found that same thing. A lot of art directors became art directors because they wanted to pay, you know, pay the bills as they're working towards illustration. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of them are just like us. We have a lot in common. And when you find that common ground, it can really build a relationship that could last for a long time. And a lot of my art directors over the years, I've worked on, you know, 5, 10, 20, even 30 projects with the same art director, you know, and you have to think about human nature. An art director on those, let's say the one that worked with me on 30 projects for the Washington Post, she could have, Carol Porter, she could have chosen 30 different illustrators, but that makes her life harder because now she's rolling the dice 30 times. She, you know, if I do good on the first couple of jobs, now she's like, well, Will Terry is a go-to guy that I can use, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's, but to me, it's more than just doing good work. It's also being personable and being likable. And, you know, even if you have to fake it, even if you're a horrible person, you know, fake it, be a good, you know, be fun, be interesting, be like you said, Jake, care about them, show interest in what they're doing. You know,
that's easy.
I think I'm going to get an art director job to pay for this furnace. That's a good idea.
Well, one thing you can do if you're new to the game, but you're making work is, you know, you get a new job and then say, you know, say you start working with a publisher, send your art director a print or a card of something that you did and just say, hey, good to be working with you. You know, just some kind of little extra thing like Will's talking about. I always send my Kickstarter book now when I start working with a new person because it has all kinds of notes and sketches and things about the way that I work that's applicable to the job we're going to work on. So I say, here's a free book, you know, hope you like it. And I sign it, you know, dedicate it to them. And they get a kind of an insight into what our process is going to be like. So it kind of works in a number of ways, but you can send a card or anything, you know, just little simple stuff.
I love that. Yeah. I'm going to start doing that. I've never really done that. That's great.
Yep. Well, that's about it. So thanks you guys. This was a fun one for me. I love talking art directors because it's part of what we do. It's like, and it's something, like I said before, it's something that when I got kicked out into the real world and started trying to illustrate, I didn't know this stuff.
Right.
You know? So anyway, take us out, Jake.
All right. That was good. Good one, Will. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. We mentioned a few times in this episode, and we just, I don't know, we love doing stuff for SVS, and people that we hear from who have done SVS love it as well. This music that you're listening to, I guess we're going to change it pretty soon, according to Will. No, but if you have some music that you think would be better, some bumper music, you know, from a website that's like royalty free or whatever,
anything,
or it's music anything that you created yourself, we're happy to check it out. Where should they send that? What's your email, Will?
They can send it to info@svslearn.com, right?
Okay, yeah, do that one.
Oh, Lisa is going to be very upset.
Oh, no.
All right, your hosts have been Will Terry at willterry.com. That's his website, and there's a contact page there, and you can send music there if you want. His Instagram account is at willterryart, and be sure to check out his YouTube channel. Cool stuff. We also had Lee White. His website is leewhiteillustration.com, and his Instagram account is at leewhiteillo. I'm Jake Parker. My website is mrjakeparker.com, and my Instagram account is at Jake Parker. This podcast was edited by Alex Sugg. Notes, let's see, what were the notes done by? Tanner Garlick. So every episode has like very detailed show notes where you can go through and read everything. If you haven't checked those out, you should. Those are all done by Tanner Garlick. So thank you for him. If you like this episode, thank you for him. Thank him for doing that. That's what I'm trying to say.
Also, the illustrations done by Tanner.
That's right. He does an illustration for each episode, and you can see those all on the SVS forum, where we have a topic devoted just to this subject that we talked about today. So you could go in and join the discussion there. That's on svslearn.com. Click on forum. Those are free to like become a member and participate in. It's a really good community there. So if you like this episode, please share it around, subscribe to it on iTunes, and leave a review. Especially if you're an art director, we'd like to hear what you thought about this episode as well. So just chime in over on our forum or on the reviews on iTunes and let us know what your thoughts are. All right, everybody, thank you, and we'll see you next time.